Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Well, it's been 20 years since the Berlin Wall fell. The entire world is going to be talking about that between now and November 9th. As Soviet-style communism collapsed 20 years ago this fall. It's been 1 year since the Lehman Wall fell and U.S.-style capitalism fell into ill repute with it. It's an interesting time, and Europe is an interesting place to see how socialism and capitalism are faring in politics and the public mind. The German socialists just lost a big election. The ones in France got swamped, but they won in Greece. With me for this conversation is New York Times correspondent Stephen Erlanger in Paris. Hi, Stephen. Welcome back to WNYC. Hello from New York.
Hi.
You wrote an article last week about Europe's socialists suffering in recent elections despite capitalism's troubles. Was this mostly pegged to the elections in Germany?
Well, no, actually. I mean, it was a good peg because journalism needs a peg. But I've been watching the troubles of the French Socialist Party and the British Labour Party and the German SPD, which is their Socialist Party, their Social Democratic Party, and the Italian Socialist Party, and everybody's having trouble, and I began to ask myself why, and was there something more than the normal back and forth of electoral politics? And I think that there is. I think socialism is dying. It's a ideology of the last century. It's losing its working class, and it's losing the interest of voters, and it doesn't have much new to say.
I think we better define our terms, because socialism means something very different in Europe than it means in the United States when they call Obama's health reform socialism, doesn't it?
Well, of course it does. I mean, socialism is an actual ideology. It moves and changes from country to country, but it was, as you know, it was an effort to make communism democratic. It took the same principles of Marxism that the working class was being cheated by capitalism, and that the state was very important to making the lives of everyone better. But it was not communist and competed with communism before World War II and other places, and was meant to take the same ideas into democratic politics. It didn't believe in a dictatorship of the proletariat, for instance. It believed in elections. But certainly in terms of the power of the state to make people's lives better, in big companies being nationalized by the state, in the state running major social programs, this, you know, was a very big part of socialism. And so in America, when people talk about, you know, Obama being a socialist, it's kind of like a joke. But in the sense that, you know, is there much of a left in America? Certainly not an ideological left that has much to do with, you know, Marxist ideology. I mean, what they're really talking about is the size of the state and the influence of the state,
right,
on decisions that, you know, many people in a more liberal tradition believe should be up to the individual. That's really the debate, I think.
Yeah, although one of the reasons that I wanted to have you on and have this conversation is that I was really struck by one of the paragraphs you wrote near the top of your article about the death of socialism, which said, and I'm reading from your piece, Europe's center-right parties have embraced many ideas of the left. Generous welfare benefits, nationalized health care, sharp restrictions on carbon emissions, the ceding of some sovereignty to the European Union. And honestly, when I read that, Steve, I thought, this means it's the right, not the left, that has collapsed in Europe. Can you imagine if the United States, now let me just finish the thought here. Can you imagine if the United States Republican Party accepted generous welfare benefits, universal health insurance, and sharp restrictions on carbon emissions? If that's the right in Europe, what's left of conservatism over there?
Well, I mean, unfortunately, there is a far right in Europe, which is ultra-nationalist, anti-immigrant, you know. That's still alive. It's it's more marginalized. But the right in Europe has been changing too, and it is trying to find ways to be more acceptable, more practical, and basically what it is, what it argues is, you know, the argument over the power of the state to improve people's lives and the power of the state to run key sectors is a given. I mean, that the state is needed to make sure that wild capitalism is controlled, then the state's needed for regulation. And the right has embraced that. I mean, that's one of the interesting things. You see the French president, Nicolas Sarkozy, actually complaining about the capitalism as it was practiced in America and in Britain more loudly even than the Socialist Party, and saying that the French state, you know, has to protect people from the depredations of careless capitalists who are not being controlled in America and are impoverishing people with mortgages, et cetera, et cetera. So to some degree, this is politics, but it's also something deeply held. There is in Europe, in the center right, an acceptance of the power of the state, which I think is simply not true of the center right in America.
So there's also a new questioning of what Sarkozy and others would see as an American style of capitalism, or even a British style of capitalism, since the fall of the markets a year ago?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, there's a lot of criticism of what they call the Anglo-American style of capitalism, and that's a widely, that's a big cliche all over Europe. And what they mean is, let's say, the city of London, the city meaning the financial center of London, and Wall Street, and the way, bad debt was sold off and off and off and off, and the way, in many people's views, and a lot of Americans believe this too, that the Federal Reserve didn't do its job and the SEC didn't do its job, and that people who should have been warning about, you know, the sort of reselling of bad debt, and that should be agencies of the state, failed to do their job.
Now, we just have a few minutes for this, but listeners, if you have any ties to Europe, call us up. You hear how Stephen Erlanger, New York Times correspondent in Paris, is describing the collapse of a certain kind of socialism, skepticism about a new kind of capitalism. What has the collapse of communism 20 years ago caused? What has the collapse of the financial system as we knew it 1 year ago caused in politics or the public mind in the Europe that you have contact with? Maybe you're an immigrant, maybe you go there for business, whatever. 212-433-WNYC. We want to hear from you. 212-433-9692. And let's take a phone call from Peter in Riverdale. Peter, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Hi. I think your guests may have discussed this while I was talking to your screener, but I think it's really important to distinguish between socialism in the sense of ownership of means of production and distribution, and social democracy, which means, I understand you spoke about this as I was talking, which it means that the state has an obligation to its citizens to protect itself against the worst aspects of capitalism. But all these countries have essentially capitalist economies. Just as an ironic thing, there was a poll about 6 months, a year ago, the Rasmussen poll, found that 53% of Americans thought capitalism was a better system, 20% thought socialism, and adults under 30, it was about even, capitalism 37, socialist 33, because the way socialism is being called here, it's national health care, taking care of people.
Things that people don't have and that they want, so it's a different kind of conversation. Thank you, Peter. And Stephen, how's the political climate for banks over there and bailouts and stimulus packages and job creation programs and the other things that we're debating here to react to the downturn? Are they having the exact same conversations?
They're very, very similar. I mean, in France, for instance, where I am, the state suffered less, partly because banks are more regulated and banks are more retail. Banks don't do a lot of stock playing, and they're more tightly controlled. But there has been, because of the recession, a big influx of money into the economy, and the size of the public deficit, the budget deficit, is growing very, very high, and not as high as a percentage of gross domestic product as in America, where it really is astounding, like 12 to 13% right now, but still historically high figures, and so people worry about the debt to be paid later. But people are trying to save jobs and they're trying to save industries. In Germany, for instance, there was a very good program called short-time work, Kurzarbeit, where basically the state, to keep people employed, would give companies like the fifth day salary for someone. So a company would pay a worker for 4 days and the state would pay for the fifth day. And that was a temporary figure. It's expensive. But, I mean, these are the kinds of debates people have. And there's a big debate going on about, you know, the state of European banks. Are they overextended? Some of them are quite overextended in you know, Eastern Europe, for instance. The Austrians are really vulnerable. So, I mean, you know, there's a lot of the same debates, but the structure was different. And there was less kind of reselling of bad debt, though people found that they had more of it than they thought when they started to look.
Here is Jean from France on the Upper East Side. Jean, thanks for calling.
Hi, good morning. My comment is that the Socialist Party in France never came up with new idea for the past, you know, 10 years. They've been the same people running the party for a very, very long time. And when Sarkozy came, he came with the dynamism and moving things around that the Social Party was not able to do. And I think a lot of people also are tired about giving too much for people who don't work, and, you know, and insurance, and, you know, you can have a free rent if you're unemployed, and you can have free doctors, and, you know, it's sometimes people say that it's better not to work, because at the end, if you work, you're going to make a little bit more money, but, you know, if you stay home, you have everything mostly for free.
And you think the French people are getting sick of the generous unemployment benefits.
It's very, very annoying for a lot of people.
And yet, when there's been proposals to roll them back a little bit, there have been massive protests in the streets, right?
Yeah, but, you know, this is a French thing. You know, people like to, you know, protest. And it basically was the same people. You have mostly teachers and people employed by the government, or other people on strike. People in the private sector are rarely on strike.
Jean, I think, is absolutely right. I mean, the size of the state in France as a proportion of the economy is very, very big. It's now about 55% of the total economy, which is enormous. And
I hear we're up to 40 in this country now, which is historically unbelievable.
Well, it is, but that'll shrink, I think. I mean, the big problem people are worried about is structural unemployment coming out of this.
Yes.
And the problem in countries like France, where there's such strong protections for workers, is that companies are afraid to hire people because it's too expensive to ever be able to fire them.
And Jean is so nonchalant about protests in the street. Thousands, tens of thousands of people protesting. Oh, yeah, that's the French thing.
No, well, everybody in France thinks they're a revolutionary, but they don't want anything to change.
We're almost out of time. I want to touch two things real quick. One is Scandinavia, because we still hear Scandinavia as the models of social democracy, and we still hear about them as having the most satisfaction with their governmental and economic systems of anywhere in the world. True in your estimation?
Yes, and in fact, that was a part of the piece that kind of hit the cutting room floor for space. The difference.
Bad idea, editor.
Well, I know. I mean, the difference in Scandinavia is these are small countries. They're basically homogenous countries. They're countries with a long history of collective feeling. And I think it's much easier to have a working social democracy in a small country where there's already a sense of collective help than in a big country that's very diverse, with a lot of immigration, with a lot of resentments.
And the last thing is your quote of Giovanni Sartori from Columbia University about Germany, because here we are at the 20th anniversary in a few weeks of the fall of the Berlin Wall. And he said the two Germanys, one socialist, one communist, two souls, never really merged. What does that mean in our last 30 seconds?
Well, what it means is that there was a communist party that ran East Germany, and a lot of people accepted its values. And when the Germanys came together, the Christian Democratic Party, which is basically the right-wing party of Merkel, could move into the East without problem. But the German Socialist Party came up against a strong Communist Party in the East and never really merged. So that's what he means. There's a far left called Die Linke, the left, which is the inheritor of the old Communist Party, and then there's the Social Democratic Party, and they've never been able to pull it together, at least not yet.
Stephen Erlanger, Paris correspondent for The New York Times. Very interesting. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Brian Lehrer, WNYC. More to come.